take an example of something where clearly the circumstances demanded a change in halacha, and that change in halacha has been widely accepted, almost universally accepted. Although, to be frank with you, it may have been accepted too easily and too readily and led to other issues. And the topic I wanted to discuss is the topic of Mechirat Chametz. Again, not halacha lemaisa, but just to trace how something over the course of, 1,500 years, how the way we get rid of Chametz has changed radically. And it's an example of it mostly because the turning point is agreed to by everybody. It's one of these things where you could point to the moment in time where the halacha, quote unquote, developed, and you can look at it and we can see together, how these things happen in halacha. Okay, we good? Fine. Let's start. It is obviously the case that it is mutter to sell chametz before Pesach. There's no doubt about that. And not only is it obvious, it's actually a Mishnah. Okay, the first source says, everybody knows it, it's at the beginning of the second parak of Pesachim, Kal sha'ah shemutar le'echol, so long as you can still eat chametz, ma'achil lebehema lechayav v'la'ofot. You can, the Mishnah says, u'mocher le'nachri, and you can also sell it to a guy. Okay, so what could be better? We have a Mishnah that says clearly, you're allowed to sell chametz before Pesach. So why is this Mishnah not the source for what we need? Why is this Mishnah not supportive of our minhag? All right, if nobody wants to participate, I'll help you. Because this is an actual, real, outright sale. Okay, you own what we call here in Israel a makolet, or what we call here in Israel a super, or what you call a supermarket. I say you as if it's not me, okay? You have Gentile customers. They come in Erev Pesach in the morning, right? You could sell them chametz. If you could eat chametz, you could sell chametz, right? There's no question about that. Although it turns out that some of the details are subject to a machlokas, and it's just interesting to note this in source number two, the Gemara on that mission says, "Umochel anachri pshita." Of course you could sell chametz to a guy, what could be the problem? It's not Pesach yet. So he says, no, la'afuke mehaitana detanya, to say that it's exclusive of the following shita of, in a machlokis tanan. Beishamei omrim lo yimkar adam chemso lenachri. Okay, you're not allowed to sell your chametz to a guy. Here it comes. Ela imken yodea bo sheyichle kodem Pesach. You can only sell your chametz to a Gentile if you know that he's going to get rid of the chametz before Pesach. Okay, fascinating. As if you have an obligation for your own chametz, and if you sold it and the guy didn't get rid of it, somehow it would be your responsibility. Okay, thank God we don't paskin that way at all. And we pass like Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel Omrim, second line and number two. Kol sha'ah shemutar le'achol, mutar limkor. If you could eat it, of course you could sell it like the Mishnah says. Okay? What's the explanation for the Shita of Beis Shammai? So Rashi says right underneath, and then two, Rashi says, Kodem Shiva Pesach, what's the problem? Why is Beis Shammai worried about selling chametz to a guy? The Kasavri mitzvah alav leva'aro min ha'olam velo shiyehe kayam. Okay? That there's a mitzvah to physically destroy the chametz, and it can't be in existence. Okay, that's the Shita of Beis Shammai. But again, according to us, according to the halacha, according to Beis Hillel, it is absolutely permitted to sell chametz to a Gentile before Pesach, no problem whatsoever. Again, not that helpful for us, because here we're discussing an outright physical sale of the chametz, unconditional, no return, no cheating. He has the chametz forever. Okay, so let's find a source that might help us. So it turns out it's a Tosefta. A Tosefta, of course, being also the writings of Tanaim. I like to think of Toseftas as being like minor league Mishnayos. They didn't really make it into the major leagues, but they're still, in terms of the history of halacha, Toseftas are a significant source of halacha from the time of the Tanaim. So here we find a fascinating example, fascinating case. Source number three says a Tosefta. Yisrael v'gai sheha, you bind this sphina. Right, it's like the beginning of a joke, right? The Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Pope, and a guy, you know, walk into a bar. Okay, a Jew and a Gentile are on a boat. Presumably it's Erev Pesach. V'chameitz b'yad Yisrael. So we'll just imagine, you know, in the old days, he's a Jew, he has very, very valuable chametz with him. He thought he'd get home before Pesach. He didn't. Or the other possibility, which some people explain, which is, he's going away for many months, and he has chametz with him that he needs to use after Pesach. Okay? Says it Tosefta. Harezo mochro l'nachri. He can sell it to a Gentile. V'notno b'matana. And he gives it to him in an outright gift. V'lokeach mimenu la'achar Pesach. And he can take it back after Pesach. U'bilvad sheyitnenu lo b'matana gemura. So long as the original transfer is unconditional. Okay, so here we have what looks like a great example for what we do. Right? So Jew and a Gentile, it's before Pesach. The Jew needs to get rid of his chametz. What does he do? He goes to a guy on the boat. Okay, I assume that, you know, it doesn't look like the love boat, but it's a small boat. But he goes to a guy on the boat and he says, can I sell you my chametz or can I give you my chametz? And says it Tosefta, so long as it's an unconditional, outright sale or gift, namely, if my stuff, and the guy says no, you would have no recourse, because it's an outright transfer to the guy. Says it Tosefta, if it's an outright, unconditional transfer, it works, and you've avoided the Isra of Bal Yiro, Bal Yimatse, and everything is fine. So what could be better than this? Now we have a Tosefta that seems to support the idea of a formal sale of chametz, but not really an actual sale, because the understanding in the Tosefta is you're going to get the chametz back after Pesach. So simple. Now we have a Tosefta. What could be better? The answer is that's not really what the Tosefta says. There are two conditions in this Tosefta that we don't meet, one of which we don't want to meet. The first condition is that the whole thing, according to Rishonim, looks like it's bidieved, meaning Yisrael v'goy shehayu ba'in b'sfina. It happens to be the case that there's a guy who's stuck on a boat with a lot of chametz. But the implication is that's bidieved. If you're really stuck and you're on a boat and you have no choice and your whole livelihood is sitting there and you're either going to have to throw it out, you know, and have no money. So the Tosefta says, okay, we'll give you a way out. So the first problem with the Tosefta is it seems to be bidieved. The second problem... Wait, no one can see me? So fix it if you can.
No, it's your... Connection.
Sorry, just a second.
Ali, we don't come here to see you. We come here to hear from you.
It might be the speed of your connection.
All right. Well,
we hear you perfectly.
I got all dressed up, so I'm a little disappointed. But okay. Okay. So my technical assistant will work on it while I continue. Okay. So the first problem with using the Tosefta as a source is that it seems like it's bidieved, and we shouldn't be able to rely on it lechatchila. The second problem with using it is that it requires something that we're not doing. Namely, it requires the physical transfer of the chametz. Everybody understands the Tosefta when it says, v'notno b'matana v'chozer v'lokeach mimenu la'achar ha-pesach, as saying, you actually physically give him the chametz on the boat. So you don't have it in your possession over Pesach, right? Like you're on the Lido deck and he's on the Aloha deck and you actually give it to him and he takes it and you don't see it for all of Pesach. Okay? So we have a source to help us, but it doesn't really support what we do, which is to leave the chametz in our homes. Okay? So it turns out there wasn't that much demand for the transfer of chametz or for selling chametz for quite a while. And here, I just want to point out what should be obvious to everybody, but we sometimes lose track of it. In the old days, there wasn't that much chametz going around. Meaning, what did normal people have in terms of chametz? You know, when we think of ourselves, what do we have? We have processed food. We have pasta. We have other things that could last for a long time in our closets. You know, but in the 800s, in the 1200s, and during all these times, they didn't have anything. You know, and so there wasn't much demand within, you know, within the Frum community, within Judaism at all, for any innovations in terms of getting rid of chametz on Pesach. I think most people just ate it all and got rid of whatever tiny bit left they had on Erev Pesach. Nevertheless, and it's hard to find sources, but nevertheless, you go all the way till the 1500s and you come to the Beis Yosef in source number 4. No idea?
The webcam, I'm responding. I don't want to have to restart.
Okay, anyway, all right. You go to the Beis Yosef in source number 4, and he says, V'katub b'chumat ha-deshen, simon kokal.
Ellie, just going back, Ellie, just for a sec, sorry. Why does it have to say mocho and give it to Matana?
Oh, the assumption is it means when you give a present, presumably you actually physically give it. Right? So we understand that to mean the guy took his chametz and physically gave it to the guy, which is not what we do. So
right,
it was
I'm
not...
saying, if it, why did it have to add the word b'matana?
Because there's two ways of doing it.
L'hachzir?
No, it's not matana almanas l'hachzir. It's an actual full-out matana. And I'll... The Tosefta is saying is, if you meet all the formal legal requirements so that if after Pesach you go to the guy and you say, give me back my chametz, and he says no, he doesn't have to give it back. If it's unconditional, whether it's by sale or by gift, either one of them will work. And if he doesn't have to give it back, that means it's an unconditional transfer. And if it's an unconditional transfer, the short answer is it meets the requirements of the Tosefta. But again, it's only b'di'evad in the Tosefta, and it has to be a physical, an actual physical transfer. Now you see what the Beis Yosef says in source number 4. Now we're talking the 1500s in Sfat. The Beis Yosef says as follows. Middle of the first line. Mishi yesh biyado inyanei chametz v'rotel letitam legoy chutz labayit b'matana gemura. You have chametz and you want to give it to a guy before Pesach. V'oto goy Hayisrael makiro v'yodea bo shelo yigabahem hagoy klal. And the Beis Yosef is honest. He says it's clear to all at the beginning of the process that it's a harama. It's a trick. We fully expect the guy to give us back the chametz after Pesach. You know, he's your neighbor. It's not the process that we go through now. You're talking about, I don't know how Jews in Tzfat found, you know, Arab neighbors who would do this, but apparently it happened. So he says, you can sell it to your friend, to your Arab friend, even though you know he's going to give it back to you after Pesach. Okay, last full line in the middle. He says, it's kind of wishy-washy language. The Beis Yosef says, Yera'eh deshari. It seems to me that it's permitted. Rak sheyitnein lo b'matana gemura v'lo shum t'nai. But it has to be an unconditional gift. So that if he doesn't, you know, if he wants to mess you over after Pesach, he can. Or you sell it an absolute sale, but for less than full price. Let's say he gives you a down payment. Okay? So this is a huge step forward in terms of where we were. The Beis Yosef does not say it's b'di'evet. The Beis Yosef says it's fine. You could, although he says, Yei ra'ed dishari, it seems to me that it's mutter. All you have to do is have an absolute unconditional transfer, whether via sale or gift, but it has to be a transfer. Okay, so great. So it looks like we found a great source for what we do already back in the Beis Yosef. So the answer is this too is not the source. Why? Because the Beis Yosef says that it's mutter if you do it chutz labayit. Once again, the Beis Yosef is codifying what we saw before, which is, it could be a harama, it could be a trick. but it has to be substantive enough that he actually takes physical possession of the chametz. So again, this once again, this is not what we're looking for, because this is not what we do. And the Beis Yosef in source number 4 grew up to be the Mechaber in source number 5. And not surprisingly, in source number 5, in Siman Tav Mem Ches of Shulchan Aruch, he comes at around about the same. He says, V'machro'o netano le'ino Yehudi, Shem michutz labayit. Again, those are the key words, Shem michutz labayit, outside of the house. Kodem ha-Pesach, Afal pi sheha Yisrael michro'o le'ino Yehudi, V'yodea bo shelo yigabo klal. Even though he knows that it's a trick, the guy's not going to use the chametz at all, mutar. It's mutar. Okay? So I guess the progression is that in the tour he said that nirali deshari, it looks like it's permissible, and already in the Shulchan Aruch he says, no, it's mutar. It's permissible.
Ellie, in addition to letting us know that it's not what we're looking for, can you let us know if these sources are aware that they're moving the goalposts or acknowledge they're moving the goalposts, even in their own context?
Good. So the short answer is, till now, nobody has known or acknowledged that they're moving the goalposts. It was not a pressing issue. There are a few people doing it. Again, the Beis Yosef and the Mechaber want to let you know that there is a way out. But my sense is that this was a simon in Shulchan Aruch that wasn't much focused on. Again, just for the simple fact that if you lived in Tzfat in the 1500s, you had some pitot. And frankly, if you think about it, you probably ate them as matzah if you lived in Tzfat in the 1500s. There just wasn't that much to get rid of, okay? The Bach, and this is acknowledged, and it's rarely so obvious. This is acknowledged, and the Bach knew it, that he's moving the goalposts, as you said. And just if you flip it, wherever you are, I put the Bach's biography because it's important. Wherever you find the English on your sheet after number 6, right? Rav Yol Circus is the Bach. Born in 1561, he died in 1640. He was the Gadol Hador after the Rama, and he wrote the Bach Bayis Chadash on the tour. I'll just go to the end. I was zoche to visit the Bach's kever. He's buried in Krakow, probably 100 meters from where the Rama is buried. We were there a few weeks before Pesach, and I mentioned, you know, wow, we're at the Bach's kever. He was so critical in the development of the halacha of the sale of chametz, and Rav Gigi, one of the Rosh Yeshiva at my yeshiva, said he's pretty sure the Bach would be rolling over in his grave now if he saw what we did with his kula. But let's see what his kula is, and it's really fascinating because it's incredibly honest. The Bach lays it all out for us. Source number 6. The Bach says as follows: Ubiminidazo, Sherov Masa Umatan, Hu Biyayin Saruf. Or saraf, we know what that means, right? It means whiskey. Says the Bach, where I live in Krakow, most Jews work in the whiskey business or the beer business. Ve'ef shalahem lemachram legoy michutz labayit. It's very simple. Says the Bach, that the condition that was demanded by the halacha till now, which is physical removal of the chametz from your house, it's simply impossible because they own a distillery or they own a warehouse and they can't just move all the stuff. And more than that, he says, Biprat lamachazikim beordina. I think ordina is like an ordinance, meaning they had a government permit to own these things and they couldn't just transfer it. So the Bach, admitting the circumstance that demand this, watch what he does. He says, Yesh lahatir. He says we could permit the sale. Be'inyan zeh, how do we do it? Sheyimkor legoy kol hachametz shebecheder, v'gam hacheder atzmo yimkor legoy. Right? Here's how things work. Says the Bach, the halacha is that you need to transfer physical possession of the chametz to a guy. In this case, I don't know exactly how they could transfer physical possession, but I thought of something else. And the something else is exactly the same thing substantively in halacha, right? If you can't move all the whiskey, sell the warehouse to the guy. And now he physically possesses all of the whiskey. See what the Rama did? He didn't change the halacha. He just innovated by saying until now we required physical transfer of the chametz to the guy. He says, but I found another way, which is the halachic equivalent of a physical transfer, which doesn't actually require physical transfer. What is that? It's the actual sale of the distillery or the warehouse to the guy. And now he discusses, and you see, he took it seriously. He says, umihu, second paragraph there in number 6, sarich limsor legoy gama mafteach. But actually, he says, it can't just be a joke, right? You have to give the guy the actual key. And the way I imagine this, it wasn't like nowadays. This is 1600s, in Poland. My sense is you didn't go to a store and get 5 keys made, right? There was like a gigantic key. I don't know, like they used to have in the Munsters or something when I was a kid. Like there's one key. And when you give the guy the key, you no longer have access, and only he has access. He says, Vim lo kein, if you don't give him the key, cave on the dad, Yisrael achzor liknot chamed zachar pesach, since you fully intend to get this back after Pesach, if you don't give him the key, havale kemaskir beito. Okay, and he basically says it's a joke. Without the key, it's a joke. Okay? And he says, end of the third line, and then further, v'lo dami lemisha kana be'echad midarkei haknaot, v'nishar ha'maftech b'yad ha'mocher, de'bechametz yesh lahachmir. He says, yeah, it's true, you could do some halachic kinyan. He says, but you're talking about an iser d'oraisa of bal yiroh, bal yimotza. You don't want to play around with that. Therefore, you have to physically transfer the key, and he has to be the real owner. And he says, and v'su, in addition, kevon sha'maftech b'yad Yisrael v'yachol likanes l'cheder v'litol ha'chametz misham. If you still have a key, and you could go in on Chol HaMoed and take all the chametz, lo samcha daita d'god m'mechira gemurahi. The guy will know it's a joke. He'll know it's an He'll think ela sover de'ena mechira. It's not a real sale. Ela lahasim me'alav isur chametz. Okay, and therefore ubilvad shelo yarim. So let's recap. The Bach says this: the current state of the halacha, the requirement of a physical transfer of the chametz, will not work for my guys, for my community, because they have massive amounts of chametz because they own distilleries and beer factories. Therefore, he says, I'm going to innovate, but I'm going to innovate by applying the existing halacha in a slightly different way than it was applied before. The existing halacha requires an actual physical transfer of the chametz, says the Bach, of course. But instead of you carrying it to his house, which is not possible, why don't you sell him your warehouse? And now he physically possesses all of the chametz. And again, he points out the following. It has to be done in a real way. It has to be the case that the guy understands that he has full access and that he could drink your beer over Pesach and he could get rid of it if he wants to. Okay? So therefore, the 1600s, that's the moment where the history of the sale of chametz changed, and it's all based on this Bach. Now, let's trace it further. So now we're in the 1600s. You have, individual rich people, I suppose, who have a lot of chametz, and the Bach found a heter for them. Okay? Now, we go 100 years further. This is the Chasam Sofer. I have it in English underneath source 7. Talk about Frankfurt am Main. Maybe this is the early 1800s. He's the Gadol Hador. And interestingly, you could see that it's starting to become more popular. And the most fascinating thing happens. And by the way, here I should just point out, I stole almost all the sources from Rav Zevin. Rav Zevin in Mohadim Bahalacha has a chapter on the sale of chametz, okay, where he quotes this fascinating tshuva, source number 7. Says the Chasam Sofer, Vihine, Vihiyot Adayin Morein Harav Baruch Frankel Zatzal Av Bezdin Tekihila Kedosha Leipnik Bechayim, when my predecessor, Baruch Frankel, was still alive, Iram Ma'aseh, the following story happened. Shehil Shinu Malshinim Eitzel Sarei HaMedina Demerin. These like Vila Malshinim Al-Tihi Tikva, right? These Jews, self-hating Jews, however you want to say it, they went to the authorities in Germany and they told them as follows. Sheyehudim Mochrim Chemtzam Bishtarot, that Jews are selling their chametz through contracts. Mibli shtempel. What's a shtempel? A shtempel is a stamp tax. It's an actual stamp If you could see me now, you'd see me. I'm making like the signal of a stamp. Chotemet, Chotam Hakira. I think that's probably the Kaiser. Right? So an official stamp. When you sold something, you had to pay tax. You had to pay VAT, stamp tax, whatever you call it. Now, he says, third line. Ukisheba hadavar lifne hachasid kira. When it came to the Kaiser, and here's just an interesting thing when you're reading it. Whenever they call the guy hachasid, you know it's going to be good. Right? They don't call the Kaiser the chasid unless he's going to be matir. So they went to the Kaiser, Amar, and the Kaiser said, hadavar yadua. She'ein ze masa umatan shel tagar. It's not a real sale. Ela inyan dat religion. It's just a religious thing. Al kein ein ze b'chiyuv shtempel. Okay? So you got the Kaiser says, no, they're not tax evaders because it's not really a sale. They don't have to pay. So that's great. Except it's terrible. Right? So he got nervous. It sounds like the Kaiser doesn't recognize the sale because he's not demanding payment of the stamp tax. Says the Chasam Sofer, Ulevavi lo kein yidmat. I'm not worried. Ki ashtar kosher. No, the shtar is enforceable. Hein bedin Yisrael im bahagoy lehotzi mekho bedayanim hareu shelo. It's absolutely the case that if the guy wants to keep your chametz, he can. Hein bedin umot olam. It's true under halacha. It's true under German law. Ella, if he wants to keep it, she'az kisheyitvenu bedine umot olam tzarich l'shalem tchilash temple. It's an absolute sale. To be that the stamp tax only would have to be paid in the case that the guy actually wanted to keep the chametz after Pesach. But he says, Acha Kaira or Kira, v'chasto v'yashrunuto. He's really sucking up here, right? In his glory and his righteousness. Amar sha'al kiyotzu b'zeh lo hitil ol hashtempel kevan she'ein tam ha'koneu mocher l'derech tagarim. It's not a regular, commercial sale. Ela lahafkia me isur chametz. Really, the purpose is to just get out of the isur bal yiro bal yimotze. Va'al kaza lo hitil ol mas hashtempel. Okay? So, in the development of the halacha, you see something fascinating. First of all, you see that the sale of chametz has become slightly more popular already in the 1800s in Germany. And again, this whole fascinating thing where the secular government gets involved and says, nah, don't think you have to pay taxes on Mechiras Chametz, because it's not a real sale. Says the Chazam Sofer, nah, of course it's a real sale. It's a sale in Halacha. It's a sale in German law. What he's basically saying is you wouldn't have to pay the stamp tax unless and until the guy actually wants to keep the chametz. Okay, so we're into the 1800s. The idea is growing slightly stronger, but still it's still kind of scattered. Now, there's one more interesting issue, and that came up probably later on, well into the 1800s. But the question is this a sale that has to be enforceable under halacha, or is this a sale that has to be forcible under secular law? Right? What matters more? So here you have a tshuva of the Divrei Chaim. And he says as follows in source number 8. Ubal karcha, against our will, tzrichim anu lezeh delo mahani shum shtar ba'olam bezeh bedinehem. He says, none of our chametz contracts are going to be enforceable in secular law. Decho gazar etzlam, de mechira kazo shena'asa lahafkia isur, eina mechira klal. He says they're never going to enforce this law. Mishum hachi ain't sarich, different spelling of the same word, shtempel. V'chol ha'arkot lo yechazku ha'mechira hazos. No court is going to enforce it. Yishal na ma'alot tvat torato. And you ask anybody. V'yeda ki kenhu. V'im ken, mahu mechira tenu. Im eino mo'il bedinehem. What's our sale worth if it's not enforceable under secular law? Ela vadai. De'ein lanu rak din shepaskal lanu ha-Torah, v'lachein ein chiluk klal beinim nichtav b'lashon Ashkenaz o b'lashon HaKodesh. He says in the end, the machlokis was what language to write the contract in. And says the Rechaim, it doesn't really matter what language you write it in. It only matters that it's halachically enforceable. This is a questionable conclusion. I think we try very much, Bizman Hazeh at least, that our sale of chametz be halachically enforceable and that it be enforceable in secular law. And it has to be the case, because presumably, if there's a sale, it has to be the case that the guy understands that, at least in theory, if he wants to keep the chametz, he can. And I've seen sales of chametz many times. You know, I don't believe that anybody thinks that picking up a handkerchief, you know, allows him to buy $1,000 or $1 million of chametz, right? They recognize contracts, and I think we try very hard to make it enforceable, you know, both under halachic law and under secular law. Now, we've made it till the 1800s. In the middle of the 1800s, there was still plenty of poskim who objected to widespread sale of chametz. Rav Shaul Yosef Natanson in 1856, you know, had a tshuva objecting to mechiras chametz as it was being done then. Now, this tells us two things. One, that people still objected to it, but two, that the mechiras chametz that we recognize had not been institutionalized by that time. And now I'll try to explain how this kind of happens. I think we get into the early 1900s, and the process is very much what it was like in the 1600s, which is you went out, if you had chametz, you went out, you found a guy who you knew and who you trusted, and you sold him your chametz. And as it became more wide, that, you know, there are people who didn't know all the halachos of mechira. They're very, very complicated. And they didn't do kinyanim properly, and they didn't sign things properly. And, you know, things were getting out of control. And so on a date that I can't identify precisely, but most people think is early 1900s, rabbis started stepping in for the first time. And instead of there being an ad hoc system in which individuals who had a lot of chametz would find somebody to sell it to, which, you know, even though formally they may have made mistakes, substantively it was much more likely to be seen as a real sale. Because I went out and I found my neighbor and I sold it to him. And presumably there was some kind of gemiras das on his part. There was some kind of understanding that, at least in theory, he could take all the chametz. But then rabbis stepped in. And as always, rabbis made things much better and much worse. Okay? They made it better because they know the halachos, and they're talmidei chachamim. And so the formal aspects of the sale of chametz were done properly. They made it worse because people started thinking that this is lechatchila. Everybody sells their chametz. If the rabbi sells my chametz, obviously, you know, selling chametz is lechatchila. Or even worse, it's a mitzvah. You know, we can't go into Pesach without having sold our chametz. We've lost out on that mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah at all. It's a mistake. And combined with kind of that new thing of rabbi selling it, we had a change in the facts, which is always what clinches any halachic, you know, development, and that is processed foods, refrigerators, and freezers. Okay? I don't think my grandparents, until they moved to America, I'm quite sure they never ever sold chametz. And it wasn't because they were super frum. It was because they never had chametz. They didn't have a refrigerator, they didn't have a freezer, they didn't have a pantry. They ate, every day they ate food. Whatever they got, whatever they found, whatever, you know, whatever they earned. There was no need. It didn't make any sense to sell chametz. Nobody did it. But then life got better, and industrialization came and processed foods, and we started living in a world where everybody had chametz to sell if they wanted to. And so we moved to this next stage where it seemed the case that everybody sells chametz all the time. So first, just a quick review, and then, you know, some last observations. We've seen basically four periods of time in terms of the halacha of Mechiras Chametz. The first was the Mishnah, which is obviously the case that you can absolutely sell chametz in a real sale to a guy on Erev Pesach. Then we saw the Tosefta, which is you can absolutely sell chametz to a guy even if there's an expectation that he'll return it to you after Pesach. Then we came to the Bach, the turning point in this whole thing, which is you can have a formal private sale of chametz even if you don't move all the chametz to the property of a guy, so long as you sell your property to the guy, and so that he has physical possession, so long as you give him the key, so long as you don't have access, right? All the indicia of a real sale, the Bach permitted. And that moved to the period of time into the 1900s, where kind of the rabbi sold chametz for the entire community, okay? Which, again, is a blessing for some people and a curse for others. And I'll explain. And now everything I say now for the next few minutes is just me. So you can absolutely reject it if you want, as I'm sure many of you will, because you know me. Okay. My general theory of halacha is that it's similar to physics in the sense that for every single chumrah, there is an equal and opposite kula. There's no such thing as a chumrah that doesn't cost you in some way. I'll just give you an easy example. Right? You're machmir on Shabbos, so you don't leave your lights on and you don't make challah. So it's great. You know, you don't have any possibility of a problem of bishul, but your oneg Shabbos pays a price. Okay? Every single chumrah has a kula, and every single kula has a chumrah. Now, we live in a time where the definition of chametz, certainly if you live in America, is anything that does not have an OUP on it, right? Anything that doesn't have an OUP is absolute chametz gomor, and if I'm from, I'm throwing it out or I'm selling it, okay? It's obviously not the case. And so because we're so machmir on the definition of chametz, well, we go and we look at our pantries and we look at our shelves, and we look downstairs and we go, I got too much stuff. I got to sell it. It would cost me a lot of money if I kept all of this. But if you go and you look in your closets, you'll see that very little stuff is real chametz. Okay, no spices are chametz. Most of the stuff we have are kitnios, right? What's left? Okay, pasta is real chametz. But, you know, I don't know, there's 3 weeks to Pesach, and from what I understand, there's no food in America anyway, right? You could, you know, you can get rid of your chametz. How many cookies? There's not that much stuff that's real chametz, right? There's not even a need to sell kitnios. It's perfectly fine to have it in your house. Our minhag is not to eat it, of course. But the chumrah of defining everything as chametz has led to a kula of us just giving up and selling everything. And there's no need for that.
Ellie,
yeah?
Is it really a chumrah that we do define all this as chametz, or is it amaratzis that we don't understand the categories properly?
Oh, the line between chumras and amaratzis is very, very thin. You know, it's obviously the case that you have to be careful. Bal yira bal yimas is an issur d'oraisa. But I think it comes together. I think that it's a nice chumrah to say, I'm not going to use anything on Pesach that's not stamped kosher l'Pesach. I think that's a lovely thing. But we have to adopt that chumrah with intelligence and to understand that the reverse is not true. The fact that I wouldn't eat something that's not stamped OUP doesn't mean that products that are not stamped OUP have to be sold. Okay? You know, I promise you, your garlic that's not stamped OUP doesn't have to be sold. It's garlic. Again, it's a nice chumrah that we don't want to use it because maybe, you know, but chametz is also batal b'shishin before Pesach. It's fine to be mevatal all these things. It's not a problem. So I think we live in a time where, because there's more processed food and things like that, you know, we too easily rely on the heter of mechiras chametz. I think it was intended originally, and we should still treat it as, you know, a bidi eved, it's easy for me to say that. I don't have any alcohol in my house. I don't like drinking alcohol. It's different, I suppose, you know, if you have valuable alcohol. But again, then, you know, you put it all in one place and you sell that place and you can identify it. It just strikes me that that's more halachically defensible than to just say, you know, I have 50 closets in my house and I have all these different places and whatever chametz in my house is yours and everything else is mine. You know, that seems problematic. It's clearly the halacha and, you know, everybody can rely on the halacha. But when you look at, you know, the development of the halacha, as Rav Gigi said, as we stood at the Bach's Kever, he thinks the Bach would be rolling over in his grave if we saw, you know, sort of how we took his heter and ran with it. And that's kind of true for all innovations in halacha. It really is. I spoke to a friend of mine yesterday who's a big Talmid Chacham who said to me he's really nervous about the future of minyanim. Again, he could be right, he could be wrong. He said because people won't remember. You know, there are people doing virtual minyanim and it's lovely. You know, it's really a nice thing. And there are people, as I said at the beginning, who are saying Kaddish now virtually, you know, something that's open. He just said, you know, once you innovate and once circumstances demand something, and maybe the right answer is to allow it, the genie never gets put back in the bottle. And I think, you know, the Bach was matir, the sale of beer and whiskey for people whose business it is. I don't think the Bach dreamed that people, you know, like us would sell a half-eaten box of Oreo cookies. Right? Just doesn't seem like the kind of thing that the Bach was aimed at or was worried about. Okay, but in the end, we've looked at the development of this halacha. We've looked at how halacha can develop so long as it's based, you know, you can't change halacha, obviously. But when the circumstances demand it, it is often the case, as the Bach did, that halacha finds a way to accommodate. But we've also seen the downside. The downside is, you know, you went from some bidyevet heter to people believing that there's a mitzvah to sell chametz and there's a mitzvah to own chametz. You know, neither of which is true, and some of which is dangerous. All right, I'm not going to long, and for me, it's almost Shabbos. If you look at the last thing on the sheet, source number 9, the Tzitz Eliezer, deals with really a fascinating question, and that is, if you have a choice between throwing out food and selling it, right? So now you have a mitzvah of bir chametz versus bal tashchis, right? If I'm going to be machmer, I'm going to throw all this stuff out, maybe that's bal tashchis. On the other hand, the Torah wants me to get rid of my chametz. So, not to ruin it, and it won't make anybody happy, but the Tzitz Eliezer basically says, Da'avid kemar avid u da'avid kemar avid, meaning, I can't really take a stand. You know, do one, do the other, but we have to find a way to do the mitzvah of bir chametz, to actually get rid of chametz, and I suppose we have to find a way to minimize, you know, throwing out money. And, you know, the world has changed now, and this is probably isn't the year to innovate. But the better way to do it, I suppose, is after Purim, you know, start looking in your closets, start seeing what you have. And it's probably the case that, you know, we could eat or get rid of most of our real chametz. And if you
ask, Ellie, this year, people, specifically because of when Yom Tov ends, at least in America, we've encouraged our bakeries to prepare challah for the next Shabbos.
Okay. And again,
it's stored and it's ready. So it's exactly the opposite.
It could be that this year, you know, life is so different that we have no choice but to do that.
No, I'm not saying because of Corona. This was a few years ago also. Nothing to do with Corona.
So I'm shocked by that. I mean, in America, there wasn't a way to get a challah.
How can you make 200,000 loaves in 21 hours?
So I'll tell you.
Why couldn't we just have matzah for another Shabbos?
Right.
I'm just telling you. Right. But I mean, guys, we all know what the bakeries tell us, right? They're sitting there. We get notes about it. We got notes about it a few years ago.
No, I don't see why, if you didn't have challah from after Pesach, you wouldn't have matzah. So, Josh, you're right. Let's say for people who are less serious, what have you, I'm not passing for anyone. I just don't see, you know, I read already that this year there may be this idea that you have to hoard chametz over Pesach because there might not be afterwards. And again, who cares what I say? But to me, you know, that seems completely reasonable. What choice do we have? But in a regular year, you know, I don't remember ever doing that. I wouldn't think there's a need. But again, look, we've looked at a range of options, and maybe the beauty of halacha and maybe the subtlety with which we approach it has to be there are things that are mutter if I need them, and now we have to decide, do I need them or not? And people can decide differently, and it could be that it depends, you know, if you live in Nebraska, you might need a heter, and it doesn't make you less from, and if you live in Teaneck, you don't need a heter. And maybe the answer is the opposite this year. Maybe people in Teaneck need a heter, in Nebraska they don't. I think once you're into the halachic system, once you're sensitive to it, once you understand how things develop, it's much easier to make an informed decision or to talk to a posek about how it applies to you. I thank you all very, very much for spending time with me. It's nostalgic, and it's good for us to be able to learn together. I wish all of you a Shabbat Shalom and all of us all the brachos that we need. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Eli. Good Shabbos.